Hey everybody, Dave here. Wow, that actually sounded very Magnus-like. I hope I don't get sued for that. Anyway, before we begin this episode of Born to Run, I want to draw your attention to a Kickstarter project I would like you to back to take a look at. In this age of mega corporate comics, we should be lending some help to our newer creators, especially when there's a unique voice to it. And think outside the big two. To that end, I want you to check out the Kickstarter for Miss Vicky and Her Cutie Commandos number one. It's a one-shot written by my buddy Sean Delaney, who wrote a great comic a few years ago called 51 Delta that I really, really liked, which incidentally is available on Comixology for an extremely great price of $3.99, so I'd recommend check that out. But Miss Vicky and Her Cutie Commandos is basically the premise is it's World War II, and sometimes the best men for the job weren't men. It's following six women working undercover for the OSS to save the free world, which I love that pitch already. It's further described as a Dirty Dozen-style squad of women secretly battling the Axis in and around the European theater for the OSS, their cover being that of an all-girl band sent out to entertain the troops. I'm actually kind of mad that wasn't my idea, so a little bit Captain America, but a little bit more adventure in the World War II era. So based on that pitch and the quality of 51 Delta, I am backing it, so I'm humbly asking that you would consider doing so. There's about 36 days to go as of the release of this episode. You can go to Kickstarter.com and just search for Miss Vicky and Her Cutie Commandos, or of course I'll put a link in the show notes for this episode of Born to Run, a Wally West Flash podcast. So please check that out. Otherwise, I'm going to let the show start. Have a great week. Flash fact, the human brain, when awake, produces enough electricity to power a 40-watt light bulb for 24 hours. That's pretty impressive for the old noggin. So, with that out of the way, let's start the show. Welcome, everybody, to Born to Run, a Wally West Flash podcast covering Wally's tenure as the Flash from 1987 to 2009. I am J. David Weider, returning to the Cosmic Treadmill to chronicle the journey of our ginger speedster. And unfortunately, I've got to eat a little crow this week. The reason is I kind of ran my mouth and made a fool of myself. See, the subject of total justice came up, and I'm actually a fan of that line of figures for many reasons. I have some caveats to that, but a pretty big fan here. And the Flash figure was very special to me because it was like having a Mike Waringo Flash right in my hand. And I was telling somebody about how much I like the figure. Now, I have issues with the Fractal Tech gear. It looks a little goony, but I could make up a headcanon reason for him to be wearing it. But in my ignorance, I thought for a moment, hey, that's Wally's first figure, and then realized, no, wait, there was a Mego Kid Flash figure when they made a Teen Titans line. But there was not, underline not, a Barry Allen Flash figure. In fact, I realized that Barry as the Flash wasn't available till we got the Superpowers line of figures. And in my head, I thought the next figure after that would have been Total Justice, which excited me, because that meant on the action figure front, Wally was 2 to Barry's 1. Now, granted, you could argue semantics. They wouldn't matter in this case, but you could argue that Flash versus Kid Flash doesn't quite count because Barry was the Flash, Wally was Kid Flash, Wally didn't get a Flash figure till Total Justice in 96, which would make the whole ratio 1-to-1. However, when I was thinking about it later, the reason that argument wouldn't matter is the fact that there was the Toy Biz line of DC superheroes that I had completely forgotten. Now, to my own admission, I had forgotten it for a very, very good reason, because those figures suck. And it is actually debatable as to which Flash that was. You could make an argument for Wally because he was the Flash in the comics at that time. You could make just as strong an argument that it was Barry because the Flash TV show was on at that time, which did feature Barry, and it was actually repackaged to reflect the TV show version, so that's kind of a wash. But it's all semantics, because either way, there were 3 Flash figures by 1996. Superpowers, Toy Biz, you either get wind-up rattling action or a weird sled, and then the Total Justice figure, which in its sculpted glory really still brings happiness to my heart. We've had a lot of figures then, but the Flash from Superpowers and the Flash from Total Justice are both really special, because the Flash figure from Superpowers was one of the first figures of that line that I actively sought out, and I ran into a pull when I got him because I had this habit as a 7-year-old of walking around the store looking at my new or soon-to-be new purchase and not watching where I'm going, so walking along really admiring this figure and bong, there's a pole right in my way. The point of all of this is that I spoke before thinking because, you know, that Toy Biz Flash was out there. As much as I would like to forget that line and its goony-elbowed Flash figure, it is there. Now, it's debatable as to who that Flash is, but at the end of the day, the main thing I am forced to admit is that I was wrong. This has nothing to do with the comic we're going to be covering this week. I was just required to admit that I was wrong on air because basically lost a bet on that one. But, you know, I stuck my foot in my mouth. So what I'm going to do now is actually segue to a podcast promo that we're going to come back and talk about the Flash number 2 and that big sexy sex machine Vandal Savage coming face to face with our Wally. That didn't sound right. I'm going to go ahead and go to that promo now. I'll be right back.
Greetings, podcast listener. Do you like... Gotcha, Mom! Or maybe...
Dragon Flame!
How about... Tatsuo! Ganeda! Or...
In the year 1999, an abandoned alien battle fortress crash-landed on the planet Earth. Our most brilliant scientists and engineers spent the next 10 years reconstructing the damaged ship and studying its highly advanced space technology called Robotech.
Do you remember...
Our Star Blazers!
Or this?
The year is after Colony 195. As the world constantly changes in the chaotic era, there are two mobile suits that could turn humans into the ultimate weapon. The Wing Zero and the Epion.
Or maybe even this.
After the desire for blood rules all, the only hope left is the one they call... D.
Or this.
Gene, grappler ship's dead ahead!
It wouldn't be fun otherwise! Let's do it!
Or...
If Cardis is allowed to be reborn, she'll destroy Marmo as well as Lodos!
Or have you seen the latest episode of...
And just like that, everything changed. At that terrible moment, in our hearts, we knew... Home was a pen. Humanity, cattle.
If you answered yes to any of these questions, then you should check out Anime Freaks, hosted by Dr. Bill Robinson and me, Gene Hendricks. Anime Freaks is a monthly podcast covering all things anime. It is available at twotruefreaks.com and on iTunes under Two True Freaks Presents Anime Freaks.
And we are back. Just to catch us up to speed, see what I did there? While running a transplant heart across the U.S., the Flash ran afoul of Vandal Savage, immortal magician. Flash was unable to save a private investigator that Savage was attacking, but ended up delivering the heart and saving a life. When Wally returned home, he found out that he won the lottery, and then he turns out to have a human heart in a box on his kitchen table. Doesn't everybody? And that's when he finds out that Vandal Savage is now in his living room. And with that cliffhanger, we pick up with the Flash, number 2, the July 1987 cover date, with a cover by Jackson Geiss and Larry Malstead, showing the Scarlet Speeder rushing to grab a blonde woman as she's thrown out of a window by Vandal Savage. Savage himself. I've still got to say that Geiss's facial expressions are really, really drawing me in. I mean, the Flash does look panicked here. Not to mention the blonde woman who looks like Frances, looking extremely scared since the ground is way down there, but it's coming quickly, lady, don't worry. But it honestly gives me the idea that Flash, that Wally, is a real person. Somehow Geiss's art really does manage to give a three-dimensional quality to him. But the quality is fine, the composition is weird, because it's off-center, and really the shot's a little too tight to really sell the idea. You don't have a perspective of the danger she's in. I really like the idea of the cover, and the fact that it actually ties into this issue's story as a winner, it just feels a little off. And you know, since last episode, I really thought a lot about Vandal Savage and what he really resembles to me, and this cover kind of sealed it that he's kind of like a roided out, badass vampire version of Tom Jones. And just to let you know up front, even though the girl on the cover looks like Frances, it's not. Spoiler. You're welcome, as I am about to spoil the entire plot of a 30-year-old comic. Speaking of spoiling that comic, we do have a story that we're going to be recapping in just a moment called Heart of Stone. Written by Mike Barron, penciled by Jackson Geist with inker Larry Malstead, it is lettered by Steve Haney and colored by Carl Gafford. And Heart of Stone plays out thusly. We pick up with Wally facing down Vandal Savage in Wally's own apartment, and Vandal wants to eat the Flash's heart. Wally isn't quite down with that. Wally attempts to go out his apartment door and finds that that door now leads to a hell-like space, so he is stuck with Savage. The Flash attacks, managing to gain the upper hand, and then sends that immortal bastard through the doorway to hell, ending that threat 5 pages into the book. But like the Terminator, he'll be back. Later, Frances catches up with Wally at the hospital, and he gives her the bad news about Savage, and the good news about winning over $6 million in the lottery. Since Savage is the more threatening of the topics, both Wally and Frances get to work tracking the villain down. Wally looks into the files from a private investigator that Savage killed last issue in Wyoming, and finds the Villers Gallery under an assumed name of Burt Villers, which seems to be Savage's new alias. But that trail goes cold when Wally finds the gallery closed and decides to take Frances out on the town to a fine restaurant and then to Club Neon, where Wally slips the doorman some cheddar to get in. All is well until Burt Villers sends over a bottle of the bubbly and Wally spots Vandal Savage on the mezzanine of the club. Savage throws a club patron out of a high window, forcing Wally to suit up and save the woman as the Flash. But using his magic, Vandal has put a spell of containment on the club, meaning that the Flash can't run back into Club Neon. Inside, Frances manages to keep Vandal Savage at bay by using her magnetic powers to fling silverware at him, but he starts to overpower her. Luckily, the Flash has made his way back into the window that Vandal shattered, and he rushes in to save the day. The Flash grapples with Savage and then throws him across the room, where Frances uses her powers to roll Vandal out the window on a metal cart. With the danger over, Wally and Frances leave, heading to their hotel at the Ritz, where Wally sleeps for over 20 hours or so, and then he heads to Titan's Tower to close the book on Savage's Burt Villers identity. Later, Wally picks up Frances in a Porsche and takes her out the Long Island Expressway and down the long driveway to a Southampton mansion. This is his brand new digs, and if Frances likes, they could be her home too, but we won't know her answer because that is where issue number 2 comes to a close. So, since we've come to the end of the recap, let's go back to the beginning of the issue to talk about it. The opening is low-key in a way, but it's extremely tense. It's more like it's a boiling pot, ready to boil over at any moment, just full of testosterone. Vandal's just standing there, just seething with rage, ready to do this. They're ready to throw down, and Wally's calmly putting on his suit, trying to really figure out a way to get out of this situation. And the first panel really grabbed me because it's composed so you have both characters in it based on a mirror. Vandal standing in the mirror, Wally standing next to the mirror, so you get this nice touch where it's a camera obscura a little bit. There's a bit of a layer of safety, but you also get this shot with both of them in there, so you get just exactly how much tension is happening. And it's not a big full-page splash, anything like that. It's a very slow build, and I really do appreciate that. Geiss and Barron are really working together well in this instance, in this regard. And just to put a reminder on the table, just to make sure everybody's on the same page, I'm not going to lead you astray, but Wally's hand is still sprained, as we saw. Last issue, he hurt it stopping a skyjacking, and I do want to mention that this kind of feels a little bit like Spidey fighting with a cold. I'm going to expand upon that a little bit later, but earmark it now, is just this is where that idea started coming into my brain. So I'll expand upon it. I have a big note to talk about, comparing Spider-Man to Wally West. And I cannot help but laugh, because Vandal says he asked his computer who the Flash is, and it told him who Wally is. So Vandal used a computer to find Wally West. In my head, it kind of plays out like my grandma trying to surf the net.
Where the hell mouse going? Do I have to catch it? Oh, there's a cutie.
But I also, at the same time, laugh even harder because I picture Vandal Savage sitting at like a Tandy 5000. Just this old relic of a computer, and I can practically hear the dial-up sound. You remember, everybody, from the 90s? The dial-up sound, which meant the internet was coming, but not anytime soon.
Goodbye.
And just to kind of come clean with you about something I did last episode, I did play a little bit of dirty pool with you and messed with your head if you hadn't read these issues, and implied, just a little bit, that the human heart on the table was Francis's. And I kind of apologize for that, but I wanted to build some tension. In truth, the heart belonged to the private investigator that we saw Vandal kill last episode. And I guess it goes without saying that I should mention that within the comic itself is a billboard. It's an in-universe ad, but the billboard itself actually does advertise a real comic that was going on stands at this time, and that is Watchmen. That's right, there's a billboard ad advertising Watchmen in the DC Universe version of New York. Not that Wally's apartment currently feels like New York, because when he opens that door, there's this hell-like dimension, and, you know, if I had a dime for every time I opened my apartment door to a hell-like dimension, I'd have about 32 cents. That's right, people. That's right. I'm doing the math. That's 3 times. The 2 cents, that's a little bit of a different story. I don't think it fully counts. But one thing I don't see in this hell-like dimension is
Satan!
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 So I guess, really, Vandal Savage doesn't rank high enough to really rate having the Beelzebub show up in his hell-like dimension. To give you a serious note on that, actually, Geist does give the hell dimension its due, because it's half a page, it's a splash, so it does have the right shock value, it just doesn't take up as much real estate as it could. So it has the impact of a full page splash, but allows the story to move at that tense pace, the slow build. And really, Vandal's wanting Wally's blood, which is kind of understandable. When he describes it, you're like, oh, that makes actually a lot of sense. To retain his power and immortality, he must feed on Wally. He also must keep his anonymity because he's trying to gain some power here and Wally's really pissing in his cornflakes. So, you know, it actually makes sense. There's logic to him wanting to kill Wally. I don't completely support it or condone it, but I understand. And he comes lunging at Wally saying he's going to squeeze his heart like a grapefruit. And I actually visualize that. I actually see this. And I actually see some potential here because I would love, love, love a Vandal Savage cooking show. I think that would be brilliant. Learning how to cook what it is Vandal Savage eats, which is people. You can call it Soylent Green or whatever you want. But I think at this point, Vandal Savage has probably concocted almost every way to cook it. And he's probably going to make some really, really yummy dessert.
Bon appetit.
I do feel the need to point out that that was only a joke. I am not actually condoning a cannibal cooking show because, well, this is a fictional character in a fictional universe. And I really don't want to be the first podcast to resort to cannibalism. That's not a distinction that I want. Instead of wisely editing that out, I'm just going to go ahead and jump into my next note, which is, really, we have this okay two-page fight, including Wally using a phone, which he describes as indestructible, to bash Vandal Savage. Wasn't there a phone company that actually used the term reach out and touch someone as their slogan at one point? Wally's taking that a little bit too literally. And then Wally basically kicks Vandal into his own hell dimension, which is a revolting development, but that kind of buttons up the cliffhanger 5 pages in. So from here, the story's able to move forward into new territory. We finished up our business from last issue, now onward to the new issue, but meanwhile, in Central City. That's right, nothing is still happening in Central City. It's Dolesville, bro. And I find it refreshing that as we find Wally at the hospital, the doctor's complaining about how he could really damage his hand, and Wally's come completely clean. The doctor knows he's the Flash, and that makes perfect sense to me. It's not necessarily wise to lie to your doctor to omit information because that interferes with their ability to do their job, which is taking care of you and your health. So Wally's actually making an adult decision here, not that his identity is really completely secret, but he's not going around handing out business cards saying, hey, I'm the Flash, fastest man alive. And there's a really good running gag as Wally is going to claim his winnings and going back to Francis's place to hide out, where he has this cab driver who overhears Wally saying that he won the lottery, and then Wally tips him a quarter. Later down the road, as they go to Club Neon, Wally tips the guy $20. So the guy does get his comeuppance, but it's a nice little gag on either end. It makes me think of How I Met Your Mother and Ranjit!
Hello!
before I get off on a How I Met Your Mother tangent, let me come back into my book here. Frances tells Wally that she went by his place and she got a weird vibe, not like the one she got when she was possessed, but she got an odd magic vibe. And it dawns on me all of a sudden, did Wally just send his girlfriend over to check out his apartment for him? I mean, he doesn't know Kyle Rayner yet, but at some point later down the road, he's going to probably rethink that and realize that was probably not a good move. She could have ended up fridged or something. Long story short, he basically used his girlfriend as a human shield against Vandal Savage, and that's not exactly the classiest move. And she feels a little upset because it brings back memories of her being possessed. That's right. Well, okay, she wasn't really possessed by
Satan!
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 It was actually Dr. Polaris and his magnetic powers that caused the problems, but you know what? She still believes she's possessed, and Wally did see a ritual, and she's almost on the border of being batshit crazy, but Wally don't care because that ass. And then moving forward from my misogyny, Wally actually does some detective work, which excites me. And I really wanted to take it seriously, but because of this comic being absolutely dated, we see Wally doing this work on an Atari computer with a phone line. And Wally hacks into the phone company, which I found hilarious, and I thought, how much more interesting would this issue have been if Wally ended up, you know, connecting with war games or something?
Shall we play a game?
I mean, this is still during the Cold War, so it's not out of the question to go boom boom. But the result of this detective work is that Savage has to dodge his ID as Bert Villers, which is disappointing because it was going to be Bert Villers, male prostitute. And I guess Wally kind of shrugs this off. Immortal man who's really resilient, really driven, who's never really been defeated, has put his sights on Wally. He just quits. Okay, that makes sense. Let's go to the club, Francis. Club Neon is apparently an exclusive club in the 80s, which meant there's complimentary cocaine in the bathrooms. That was how I imagined it when I was a kid, and it stuck with me into adulthood. But I have to applaud a detail, and again, it's kind of like the True West poster last episode. It's a detail that I'm not sure who the source is, but it's so consistent, I really just want to stand up and give it a round of applause. You know what? Let's give it a golf clap, everybody. And what are we golf clapping about? Well, there is some sort of show on April 9th. If you remember last episode, this was firmly set in March 1987, which means timeline-wise, this actually matches up perfectly. It's so unnecessary, but it's such a fine amount of detail that I really just want to give a big thumbs up. But I gotta ask, what is going on with Wally's outfit? He's wearing this ruffled shirt and this what looks like to be a purple velvet tuxedo. Oh, I get it. Wally's trying to go from being Scarlet Speedster to the purple one. He's trying to emulate Prince.
I'm Prince. So what seems to be the problem? Oh, how rude of me. I haven't given you enough time to freak out yet. You may do so now.
Well, if it's 1987 and you're trying to emulate somebody, you could do far, far worse than Prince. I mean, Pee-wee's Playhouse was on the air at that point. I'm sure it'd get you into a club, but it may not get you laid. Prince, on the other hand, oh, you're knee-deep in it, people. You're knee-deep. And then Vandal Savage tries to be villainous, but he ends up just being seductive. Like, I kind of have a man crush on Vandal Savage and his Tom Jones ways. Because he sends over this bottle of wine, he's putting his sights on Wally, and he's doing it in a seductive way. You're getting this bottle, and you're like, oh, that's really sweet, that's really thoughtful, have a drink before I kill you. And then you look across the room, and there he is, standing there. That Tom Jones stare, those piercing eyes. I just want him to sing It's Not Unusual. And even I would throw my panties at Vandal Savage at this point, people. He's that darn compelling. I mean, really, if you look at it, I think this has been a game of seduction for Vandal Savage the whole time. He runs into Wally on a roadside. It's like a meet cute. He shows up at Wally's house with a heart in hand. Really, I think he's trying to communicate. I think he's really just wanting to absorb Wally and be a part of his world. And Vandal Savage just can't take the sexual tension anymore, so he tosses somebody right out the window, and she gets airborne like she's Maverick from Top Gun. And so Flash going after the woman is actually pretty easy. Saving her, no big deal. Getting back in the building requires some work. Now, while he's dealing with that, don't discount Frances, because she's using silverware. For the love of Pete, that fork to Vandal Savage's face looks like it hurts. I love the idea that Wally gets into the club fine by slipping some cheddar, you know, slipping the doorman some money, but he has to jump off this ledge into this broken window as the Flash. There's something to be said there, that challenges were going to be greater for the Flash than Wally, but I guess that's better left unsaid. And admittedly, there's actually a nice edge to this fight. You're in a confined space where the Flash's speed can be a little bit trickier to really use, you've got a lot of innocent bystanders who are potential collateral damage and a raging mad magic immortal man, so there's a very real danger. This guy, Vandal, he's not messing around. He will tear Wally's heart out all Cali Ma style. And it dawns on me here as I'm looking at this, because I kept going over this page again and again, this is why Savage is actually a very good enemy for this Flash. It's an extremely inspired choice because you have Savage, who is a magic-based villain for the most part, versus the Flash, which has for a long time been a science-based hero. One of the main edicts from Julia Schwartz when reviving the Flash as Barry Allen was, let's make his adventures rooted in science and let's give science lessons to the kids. And that was Barry's main weapon. So it's nice to see that Wally's first real encounter is up against a man of magic, where science has logic and research, magic can do whatever the f*** we want. You put that up against the Flash, and a limited Flash who really is working off of consuming the fuel that he's eating, limited resources, that's a really good match. And you also have Vandal Savage being a villain of heritage, that he really did battle the original JSA, he battled Barry, he's an older villain carrying a lot of history behind him, and Wally's this newer hero, really. He's really stepping up to be the hero the first time. So he's got this youth and inexperience behind him. It's a really nice match, and Baron really thought this through, I think. So just to point this out, so far we've not had Central City, we have no familiar rogues, none of the fallbacks, no Captain Cold, no Mirror Master, and we have this everyman Spider-Man fill, which is kind of what I wanted to talk about and expand upon. Because as much as it's obvious to me now, I didn't think about it last episode, the comic feels very Marvel. You have this young everyman with real world ups and downs, and it's set in New York to boot. I will admit it's not a direct analog, you can't quite change Flash to Spidey in the script, or Francis to Black Cat, nor Vandal Savage to Doc Ock and have it be the exact same thing, but it's actually very close. It has that real-world Marvel feel, and I have to ask myself, is that a bad thing? Well, it's a break from tradition, and that's a break from tradition for a character that arguably set up the template for the Silver Age. He initiated the Silver Age, and he gave a vibe, a mood, and a storytelling aesthetic that was followed through, and built off of. So we have Wally zigging where Barry would zag, so it's not necessarily a terrible thing, and this was sort of a line-wide thing where DC was, I wouldn't say they're trying to be Marvel, but they're trying to be different from what they did before. They're freshening everything up. Wonder Woman is an ambassador, Batman's an urban legend, Superman grows facial hair, and does porn movies. Yeah, I'm not joking about that. I wish I were, but that's life in the post-crisis DC universe, right? Am I right? The direction can't be immediately discounted as wrong, because it's not necessarily a bad direction, but it is a very clear, different direction. It's a little derivative of the Marvel flavor, but at the same time, it's a bold choice, and it has a new aesthetic to build on. And if any character is going to embody the mood, aesthetic, and really the zeitgeist of a certain generation of comics, I would like it to be the Flash. So yes, it would be ignorant to say this is not derivative of Marvel and doesn't have the same storytelling principles and character principles as Spider-Man, but it would be wrong to discount it as that and simply that, because it does decide to do other things with the character. As the legacy aspect becomes clearer, it moves further and further away from this derivative aspect and becomes its own thing. So as a starting point, sure. As its finishing point, absolutely not. Completely its own thing. And then it occurs to me that Vandal Savage can't be defeated. He really can't. He hasn't been, and Wally's not up to that task. Just to be completely honest and blunt, he's not up to fighting Vandal Savage. And that's why Vandal is really becoming a fascinating villain to me, because really, at best, he can be evaded, but he can't be defeated. So Wally and Francis end up holding up at the Ritz. You know, there's no halfway about this. They can't go back to either of their houses. So why not get something upper class? You know, he is so fancy. You already know. The Flash is in the fast lane. From LA, you get it, you get it. And I like this conversation. It's not a throwaway conversation, but it's not a big piece of the puzzle. But Frances is warned about using her gifts in public because her life would never be the same. People would come to her for help and she really couldn't turn them down. Once you go public with that, you never really go back. Your life, even if you lose your gifts, is basically servitude to some extent. And that's really the closest we've come to Wally complaining about being brought back into being a superhero. I think it's very telling, but at the same time, I think that Wally not making a big, hand-wrenching deal out of it is also telling. And realistically, Wally could complain, and I don't know that I would begrudge him, because he quit being Kid Flash to go to college and live a normal life, and he was only brought back in because Barry died. It's not out of the question for Wally to be bitter towards Barry, bitter towards his destiny in a lot of ways, because it's not really just a life at college he's giving up. It's a matter of privacy. It's a matter of peace and quiet. So he's not really complaining. He is making an observation, a very matter-of-fact observation, and he really is warning Francis against something relevant. But let's be clear, Wally's not suffering. He's at the Ritz with Francis, and he got her some lingerie. So from there, the comic does kind of a Truman Show. The camera pans away so we never see anything, and we don't get that reverse cowgirl position I was so really looking forward to. Even with that, I've never, ever seen nor heard about a real estate deal that goes by Costco style. You can't just walk up to a house and say, I want this, and have it by the end of the evening. You've got a lot of paperwork to do. Even if you're paying in cash, which Wally seems to be doing, you've still got a lot of work. There's inspections and who knows what, but I guess money makes things move faster. And so we come to this point where, you know, clearly Wally and Francis are somewhat serious. But Wally's springing this idea of cohabitating on her, and they've been together for a while, but not a long, long while. And I realized that Wally thinks and maybe emotionally feels faster. He has to move faster because if he's running down a road and there's a pole, he has to be able to move around it. You or I, running at that speed with our normal brains and reflexes, probably would be splattered. So he's going to have slightly different perceptions from us, which means he may, because of being the Flash, because of his speed nature, he may be the guy that says, I love you after dating for like a week or on the first date. He rushes into things, and I mean that pun intended. You can also accentuate this idea of him being, you know, emotionally speedy with the folly of being 20 years old. And it's got to be nice to really be in love with somebody and really not be manipulated by it. Right, Raven? But when you think about it, Francis comes from this middle-class home that got corrupted by death and this H.P. Lovecraft rituals. She's lost her whole family in a relative short period of time. This is a big, big leap for her. And not to mention they're both very young, and Wally's not exactly stable yet. He's certainly more stable than most 20-year-olds I know, but he's not really settled, I guess is the best way to put it. And the proof of that is him really offering this idea of cohabitating so early in the game to somebody who's emotionally still being worked on. It's selfish, in my opinion, to throw this on her at such a sudden moment. But it's there, the offer is there, and we're going to find out what she does next week. Overall, Baron and Geist are starting to settle in, and they're moving the ball down the field a little bit. They're setting things up. The Savage fight, both of these escalate in ferocity, and they take the villain off the board for the moment. So it does end up with this being kind of a pilot. These two issues form the pilot episode of the ongoing series. With this issue, this Spider-Man analogy really stood out, but Baron has a chance to build Wally's cast and build Wally forward with this aesthetic. I'm excited to show you where he does take this, because knowing what's coming really does make this a lot more palatable, and I struggle to remain separated, because overall, I still have to admit this is still paced oddly. Eventually, there are payoffs and a stabilization period, but as an individual set of issues, the pacing needs some work, but I can chalk it up to Baron finding his way around the character in the DC universe as a whole. There are definite improvements with this issue over the first one, because more fun is creeping into the book, and Wally's setting out and proving himself to be a formidable superhero, and I can start seeing the points where Baron and Geist are finding their footing in these first two issues. So both are really acceptable reads. Now, with the pilot out of the way, I want this series to show me that they've got it. Make this series move forward. I feel like the potential is starting to wind up. I feel like I enjoyed this issue more than the first one because of the detective work, the teamwork with Francis, and simply put, the action. While last issue was very much the epitome of average, this is actually starting to move to the above average, very enjoyable category. It's on its way up, just not quite there yet. And with that, looks like it's time to wrap this show up. Next week, Francis makes a choice, and then we have technology going wild. All of that in The Flash number 3. I will see you in 7 days. Until then, wingheads, you stay classy and you stay speedy. This has been Born to Run, a Wally West Flash podcast, which is made for entertainment purposes only. The show is not affiliated with DC Comics and does not draw profit from the material discussed. The Flash and all related characters are copyright DC Comics Entertainment, all rights reserved. All opinions are those of the host and do not reflect the views of any other individual, entity, or organization. All music and sound clips are used for entertainment purposes only, and the copyrights lie with the copyright holders. No infringement is intended and believed to be covered under fair use. Thanks so much for listening. I will talk to you next time.